Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Good evening. It is Monday evening, and that means it is time for the Monday Night Euro review show from the Anglo-Italian Pod. And I'm joined by a very good friend and another good friend. Let's start with Ben. Ben, how are we doing, man?
All good. Thank you, man. Disappointed to be out of the cup, but it was a good weekend for football. And you know what? Sometimes, you know, you got to move on. So, well, I'm all good, thanks. I'm all good and looking forward to getting into it.
Nice. This is it. We move, as they say on Twitter, right? Exactly. And we are joined by, first, it's your debut on the show from KH Analytics, Kieran Hill. How we doing, man? You good?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Very bizarre week of football, all in all. But yeah, ready to get into it.
Nice. Yeah, there's lots to talk about. Just when people start doubting the FA Cup, it comes with all the magic of the cup, TM. And I think we're going to start with the FA Cup, probably. There's a lot to talk about this week. We're going to obviously go through Maidstone, their incredible run, and that incredible video of their reaction to the next tie. If you've not seen that, we'll be talking about Newport coming close. We'll talk about Luton a little bit, and we'll do a general roundup of the FA Cup. And of course, sorry, Ben, we'll be talking about Man City and Spurs. And then in Serie A, we'll be talking about Lautaro Martinez having a career-defining season as it stands, Milan letting it slip, and a little bit of drama down at the bottom. So lots to get on with. So let's just go for it, and we'll start with the FA Cup, and let's go for Maidstone on the march. Incredible stuff from them. Lovely early kickoff. Just as you finish your lunch, or just as you tuck it into your lunch, it's time to get some FA Cup football. It's beautiful. Now, Ben, was this as simple as this statistic showed? 38 shots for Ipswich, I think, 2 for Maidstone, but they got the win. Or is that doing Maidstone a bit of a disservice?
I actually think that it doesn't do them a disservice. It just kind of, it highlights exactly how the game was, but it highlights their kind of defiance as well. And, you know, they weren't, I think what I saw from a lot of Ipswich fans after as well was, especially with them being a championship side and a side that has dropped down lower than that as well over the last few years, kind of says, well, you know what, fair play to them, fair play to Maidstone. Sometimes these things happen. Their keeper was excellent. They had a few, in the first half, they were quite lucky on a couple of occasions. There was a couple of deflected shots that hit the post that he would have been nowhere near. There was that one, I think it was, who was it from? I can't remember now, but it was there was that one that hit the post. But other than that, he made a hell of a lot of good saves. And they, you know, they dug in there and they were kind of value for it as well. And, you know, like you said, the magic of the cup, as they say, has kind of been in full force this weekend. And certainly in the FA Cup so far, we've had a lot of good stories. Maidstone being one of them, knocking out Stevenage and then knocking out Ipswich. And, you know, who's to say they can't go another round further? Obviously, we'll talk about the draw in a minute, but it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant to see. The first goal was taken with such quality as well.
It was a beautiful finish. That was like really a Premier League level finish. It was so composed.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like the composure to have in that, in a game of kind of, it's always a tricky one because you kind of say it's a game of huge magnitude for Maidstone, but also like they're playing with no pressure, are they? So it's kind of one of those, it's why we see these kind of shocks, because obviously, you know, there isn't pressure on it from the outside, but everybody's kind of looking on and willing them on. So that kind of creates an element of pressure within itself. But I don't think the players necessarily feel that. And obviously, I think George Elokobi's done such a brilliant job there to kind of cultivate this real community feel. And it's just a brilliant, brilliant story. The second goal, they were a bit fortunate with, because I think the irony is, if they were probably playing against a Premier League club, that goal probably would have got chalked off because of the foul on the halfway line. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's the kind of special part of it as well. It's proper football, proper FA Cup tie, and yeah, they were through. And it's really tricky, because you want to say they deserved it, and that everyone would give it to them, like 100%, and they deserve to be exactly where they are. Obviously, Ipswich were very unlucky, but I think especially when it's the context of having a Championship side against a lower league side compared to a Premier League side, where the fallout isn't quite as big. If that was a Premier League team that knocked out, obviously the size of the shock would be greater, but also the fume from the side that was on the end of the defeat would be greater as well. So I think Ipswich did quite well to just almost take it on the chin and mm-hmm. hand the respects over to Maidstone. I think I was watching George Elokobi be interviewed afterwards on BBC, and the Ipswich fans gave him a standing ovation as he was walking away. So I think it was a good amicable kind of feel to it. They, you know, sometimes you make your own luck in football, and these stories are incredible. And yeah, all power to them, and hopefully maybe another round further. So,
this is it. The video that I referenced was them. I saw it retweeted, and someone was like, "This is like they're reacting to 9/11." It's like there's someone just screaming "Man City" in the background, then all their faces just drop as they get Sheffield Wednesday. I think it's going to be right. Get to play at Hillsborough. That's quite nice.
That's a great tie for them, though. Like, I think it is.
It's nice, right?
Yeah, I think the anger around it's been a bit weird. Like, I kind of feel like, obviously, I understand why they want City. Oh, sorry, not the anger to it. The anger towards the clip of people being like, right. Oh, they should be like grateful to sort of like, be there and stuff like that. And like, you can totally understand why they would want City. Like, of course they would. They know they're not going to go probably much further. It'll be a huge draw for them. Take loads of fans up there, TV money, all that kind of stuff. It's exactly what the FA Cup's about for these kind of teams. But that said, like, again, Sheffield Wednesday, it's another opportunity to knock out a side above them, you know, however many levels above them. I think they're National League South, so it's something mm-hmm. like six levels above them. It's a great draw for them. But you can understand why they would want City, for sure.
Of course you want City. But I think, and Kieran, I'm going to go to you. Like, this Ipswich team, now obviously their focus this season is not really on the FA Cup. It's much more on getting into the Premier League. But the fact that Maidstone have beaten them, they can look at a side like Sheffield Wednesday, who maybe aren't having as good a season. And Maidstone can probably head into this with a bit of confidence, right? We can do this again.
Yeah, 100%. I think... obviously, as you say, like they did get sort of dominated in the game, but the game management from Elokobi was incredible. Mm. And like the fact that they, like, you know, they managed to win from those sort of statistics is like crazy. And I think, as you say, like Ipswich are having a way better season than Sheffield Wednesday. They, if anything, they're a league apart in itself. So it's like, if you can go to Portman Road and get a win, who says that you can't go to Hillsborough? Or what was it? Was it Coventry, the other side?
Coventry was the other option.
Yeah, Coventry. Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's either of those grounds. That's they will now be seeing that as a winnable game. Whether it is or not is yet to be seen. But I think if you're a Maidstone fan, I'd be buzzing with that, because you've mm-hmm. got the opportunity to go to the quarterfinals if they win.
Yeah,
So if they've got, like, I think they've got a real chance of getting to the mm-hmm. quarterfinals now. So I think it's a great draw for them personally.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. They're the first team from the sixth tier to get this far since Blythe Spartans in 1976 or 1978, I think it was. So it is genuinely history defining what they're doing here. It's incredible. George Elokobi came across, he always comes across so well. His story is really inspiring. It just seems like such a top bloke. But we've got this far, and we haven't even mentioned the guy who fell on top of the fan rolling off the roof, which I think is my possible highlight of the weekend. Just imagining some 40-year-old dad falling on you as you're just trying to, like, enjoy the game. Absolute scenes. And did you see the policeman at the end in the video who was trying to, like, control the crowd? Just the most futile effort ever.
Yeah.
No reaction to the bloke falling over. Just trying to sit down, please. Sit down, please. Absolutely mental. Love it. Incredible for Maidstone. And, yeah, their goalkeeper. We need to give their goalkeeper a shout-out. We give him a bit of a shout-out. But he's got a few caps for, like, Brazil under-20s. And you might remember a story a few years ago for Torquay. He scored in the playoffs,
yeah,
a last-minute equaliser, and then saved two penalties in the shootout. They lost, unfortunately.
It's
what
got
a career that guy's having. It's insane.
Yeah. That was, you could see how emotional he was in his interview as well afterwards. He kind of just broke down in tears on the BBC and was sort of like, it's just, yeah, it's an amazing, it's so funny sometimes how, like, often you see with these sort of smaller minnow sides in the FA Cup that get this far, it's a massive story in themselves. But the beauty of it is that there's so many little kind of subplots within the team, like whether this player's been brought in only a few weeks ago on a trial, or like he's a part-time plumber, all this kind of stuff. Like, you, that's what the FA Cup is all about. A chance for people who, you know, a non-league club to go and mix it with a team that's on the verge of potentially being promoted to the Premier League. If not, you know, a draw from against Man City or Liverpool could have been beckoning for them as well. Like, it's just an incredible story, and he deserves all the credit, because it's, you know, it's easy sometimes for, like, I feel like sometimes in these situations, a goalkeeper's performance in this will kind of be, he'll almost get patted on the head a little bit and say, oh, didn't he do really well? And, you know, it was either in spite of the victory or in spite of a defeat, maybe. And it's like, oh, well, they gave it everything they did, but he won them the game. And like, some of the saves weren't even necessarily, that he wasn't pulling out a load of worldy saves. He just needed to be, like, he was where he needed to be. And he caught everything. There was a goalmouth scramble that they dealt with, like, really, really well as well. They were defended really well, Maidstone, like, well as they can against really quality opposition. Some, the likes of Jeremy Sarmiento, who's just gone to Ipswich, who was at West Brom previously. And there's a couple of other loans as well who are thriving there as well. So, yeah, it was a massive, massive result for them. And their keeper was just ridiculous. It was,
It was, I think it was that save in the far corner at the end that was the one that stood out.
Yeah, just tipped over the bar.
Yeah, I do feel like there needs to be a bit of leveling at Ipswich, that they just weren't able to, a lot of the shots they had, Kieran, just weren't particularly high quality. A lot of them just went pretty much at the goalkeeper, right?
Yeah, and this is what I thought. I think, so you can sort of tell it, like, a great deal about the game by the fact that they had, what was it, 38 or something shots. Yeah. But also, as you say, the quality of the shots weren't amazing, and like, the keeper did really well, but I think Ipswich should have definitely taken a few. I mean, it goes without saying, with that many shots, you've got to take a few of those chances. But I thought, take nothing away from Maidstone. I thought they deserved it, because, yeah, I thought their game management was excellent. So,
well, that's it, exactly. It's what we want to see. And their breaks were so incisive. And again, just a quick mention for that first goal. Absolutely beautiful finish, the confidence behind that. But we're going to leave Maidstone there for now. And we're going to move on to, it was so close. It was nearly an upset we all wanted. I turned over as it was 2-0 and I was like, right, sod this. I'm not going to sit and watch United win. And then Ben messaged on our group like, Oh, it's back on. So, Ben, I'm going to give you the lead here. I thought it was all done with 17 minutes, but Manchester United endeavour to keep us all on our toes.
Yeah, they're the biggest surprise package in football in the Premier League, I think. And that's not a good thing either. It's just like, because half the time you know exactly what you're going to get. But sometimes in these games, you see a little bit something different from United. Like, they played, I mean, you can't give them too much credit. They were playing against a side that I think 16th in League Two, but they came out, the first goal from Fernandes was really well worked. The second goal, again, good goal. And it was like, it just felt, yeah, that's it, done. Game, even at 1-0, like, it just sort of felt like that. But Newport kind of got back into it from out of nothing with that goal. Well, a brilliant strike that took a deflection from outside the box. And to be fair, I thought Newport kind of overran United's midfield a lot of the time as well. I thought Casemiro has a really poor game. And I think he's one of those players that's almost not being talked about as much, because Anthony and Rashford and these other players and Fernandes kind of are picking up a lot of the stick, rightly so. Like, that doesn't diminish that in the slightest. But Casemiro's kind of fall off this year has not gone under the radar, but I think in this sort of game against the League Two side highlights that even more. I think he had 60-odd% pass completion when he had a lot of the ball as well. He gave it away so much. And Newport were kind of winning that midfield battle for a lot of the game. And United were, you know, you can say they were deserved winners. They had the more quality. They put out a very strong team as well, United. Let's not kind of let that be forgotten. It was basically as strong as they could have gone. And they got the job done in the end. I thought Hoyland had probably one of his best games for United. I think it's kind of shows that it's just about the service that he's not really getting, because I think there was a stat that all of the goals that he scored for United have kind of been made by himself. He hasn't, no one has assisted a Højlund goal in the league or in all competitions. Or maybe it's not in the, there was, because there was a few in the Champions League that must have been, but I saw that stat earlier. And he grafted hard for his goal. I saw there was a moment where he got really, really frustrated with Garnacho for not putting the ball in the box when he would have basically just had a tap in. I think what's good about Højlund now is I think he's starting to, where some of the other characters have fallen away at United, and we'll probably get on to talking about Rashford, I think he's, as this younger player, big signing, a lot of money, has kind of starting to establish himself as one of the more, maybe, not senior players, but he's trying to make himself a bit of a leader in that team. Because I think he does a lot of good work up front that kind of goes a little bit unnoticed, or not unnoticed, but unrewarded for sure in terms of his goal output. And I think it's definitely coming for him. It's just about the quality around him. But I think, again, it's another result that, and again, obviously, there's an element of bias here as a Spurs fan, but I thought when we played United, even though it was a positive result for them in the sense it was a draw against a rival, and obviously they've gone through to the next round of the cup, I think it's, again, another game, even though it's a positive result, that teaches us more about United's failings than what they're actually good at. And I think it was a very concerning performance, and concerning in the way that Ten Hag just sort of completely snapped after the game and was like, Newport had nothing in the game. That just shows to me that that's a manager clearly under pressure. And I think he is feeling that. And I think it is intensifying with stuff that, you know, isn't necessarily his fault around him as well, with Rashford and all these kind of other things off the field. But I think he is feeling the heat now. And again, it just wasn't convincing from United at all, but they got it done. And sometimes that's what you need to do in these games.
Well, this is it. And I saw, you know, we were talking about a United win where you take it because it'll keep Ten Hag in the job for a week. I was like, okay, we'll chalk this down to it keeps him there for a bit. But just the fact that, like, and you have to give Newport credit, but just the fact that United did allow them back into the game and did switch off and did basically what I did, turned over and thought, well, this is done, right? The fact that those players are capable of doing that and do that regularly is kind of sums up everything there. But Kieran, I'm going to go to you, because I could talk for hours about how much I hate this man, but Antony had a goal and an assist and at the same time, one of the worst performances I've ever seen by a professional footballer. It was horrific, that performance. Like, what are your thoughts of him in general? Do you think I'm being harsh? I thought it was genuinely embarrassing, some of the stuff he did yesterday.
I do not think you're being harsh at all, basically. I think I
good. You can come back.
I think he's, like, not great at all, really. I mean, there's the whole thing about, you know, when a player has that higher price tag, do we judge them too quickly? And I was thinking originally, like, okay, let's give him a bit of time. Let's see if he can sort of maybe not justify the price tag, but even just start doing a bit better. And he just, it's been over a year now, a year and a half, and he's really not shown any signs of improving at all, in my opinion. If anything, he might be getting worse. I know that there's a lot of problems, sort of deep-rooted problems within the club at United, but I don't see how a manager is sort of highly regarded before he moved to Manchester United, like Ten Hag is, can still be starting someone like Antony in that team when you've clearly got some quality on the bench. You know, they had Ahmad Diallo on the bench yesterday, who I was expecting to see play, and yet they still went with Antony. And yeah, I just think, I to be honest with you, I can't see him ever getting to the level that he should be at, because I enjoyed watching him occasionally at Ajax, but I think it's a very different, it's a whole different kettle of fish when you're in the Premier League. So, you know, and it, the fact that they were playing against Newport and he got goal and assist, but really it wasn't a good performance at all from him. So I think that tells you all you need to know, really.
Yeah, I feel like I saw him give the ball away more than anything. And I felt like, going back to Højlund a little bit, like the frustration of having him and Garnacho on the wings must just be like, frigging hell, just one of yous, lock up, will you? But yeah, I thought it was absolutely horrific performance from him. But we need to talk about someone who wasn't there, unfortunately. I've heard Belfast is a great night out. I didn't think it was a popular hangout spot for professional footballers. I was expecting it more to be like, you know, Las Vegas or Dubai or something. But Ben, what is happening with Marcus Rashford? Do you think this is piling a bit more pressure on Ten Hag and he's pulling what hair out he has left at how to control this dressing room?
Yeah, for sure. I think, again, I have some sympathy with him because, again, these things are kind of out of his control. But in the way he deals with it, I just find it so... so strange, because he sort of said in the press conference on Friday that he was ill and everybody knew, everybody had sort of seen the rumors going around on Twitter, everybody's seen the videos. And then he waited till Sunday to say it's an internal matter and we'll address it. And it's like, well, there obviously is a problem there then. So it's like, why don't you just come and either say it or don't say anything, because then you're just kind of opening the door to the fact that there is an issue and you are going to deal with it, i.e. you will probably punish him in some way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in terms of Rashford, I don't think it's so much like the end for Rashford United, but I don't really understand how he comes back from here, because, or certainly gets anywhere near back to what we've seen. Mm-hmm. Because I even said it against Tottenham, where he scored the goal and then started doing this as the celebration. It's like, you've not shown anything near that kind of level that we've seen previously from Rashford 3 years ago, maybe, to warrant kind of silencing the doubters or the critics.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing this is only going to add more fuel to the fire. I've got no problem if players want to go out. And it's like, players are human beings at the end of the day. I didn't quite agree with what Dion Dublin was sort of saying on the match of the day, I think, afterwards. Like, sort of saying about how you should just be going out with, like, your partner or your wife and out for a meal and that should be it. Because it's like, footballers aren't robots. In the 70s, 80s and 90s, that was a completely different culture and players would be on the piss all the time and turn up and play on the Saturday. But the turning up and playing on the Saturday was the key part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think fans haven't changed that much. Like, fans bought into that kind of culture because they didn't earn as much money then, were far more in touch with reality, even though they did earn more money and they were heralded as these kind of heroes. But they felt far more in touch because they just acted like normal people. But you knew if they turned up on a Saturday and played, then it would be fine. And that was why people had far more respect for these players that used to go out and do that a lot more frequently. And it'd be the same now. Like, you know, people... there isn't so much a kind of drinking or going out culture in football anymore, but we're not privy to absolutely everything. And we've seen examples with the likes of Jack Grealish and stuff. But as long as you turn up to training and you turn up to play the game, I don't think fans really care. I certainly wouldn't care.
But you look at, like, people like Ronaldinho and Ronaldo or whatever. Of course, these are like elite talents, but they were not good professionals, right?
Athletes,
and people love them more almost because of that. I love the stories that come out about Ronaldinho just turning up for training straight from the nightclub or whatever, because as you said, he still turned up and absolutely just killed everyone on a Saturday. Like, and it's just, yeah, I worry for Marcus Rashford and, as you said, where he goes from here. Like, Kieran, do you think... because it feels like he's had a few rebirths at United. He's been a very up-and-down player. Do you think this is like a straw that breaks the camel's back? Apparently, it's going to be 600-odd grand fine. Like, do you think he can come back from this?
I think him as a player, yes, I think he can come back from this, but I don't think that at Manchester United he can come back from this. I think I've seen enough of their fans sort of on Twitter saying, the vocal ones sort of saying, get him out sort of thing, because if he's not going to show full commitment, as you said, we're not expecting them to be robots and not go out or anything, but as long as you play on the Saturday, and I just think they're starting to lose their patience. And obviously we saw, even as close as literally last season, the back end of last season, Rashford was getting labelled as sort of world class and everything, and we all know as football fans how good that man is at football. Mm-hmm. I've seen him, like, sort of take it around players, score goals, and just when he's playing with confidence, he's one of the best left wingers in the league. Mm-hmm. And I just, I think his Manchester United career could be over in terms of getting back to those levels.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes, because I think if they do take him back, and if they do say, right, we're going to give you another chance, it's kind of like this new ownership is almost off to the same start that the other ownership has been off of, just letting people off and being like, no, but you're a Manchester lad, so, you know, we'll just let you, we'll bring you back. I think this is like a big moment for them. I know there's been a few of them over the past few seasons with Ronaldo, etc., but this feels like a big moment for them to be like, no, this is a chance to put a marker down and be like, this isn't good enough. But I don't know. Even with the Sancho situation and everything, it all just seems so messy, the man management and stuff in that club. You don't know what's going to come out if he does leave and what the situation is behind the scenes. So we'll see. But I just hope we see Marcus Rashford back to his brilliant best. Like, because, again, as you said, he's a pleasure to watch when he's firing on all cylinders. And he scores, he always scores against Arsenal. He has an absolute knack for doing it. But kind of glad that he's not doing it against us now. But we're going to leave there. Newport, sorry, Newport fans. We didn't really get much time to talk about you, but we were very impressed and you're unlucky. The first goal in particular was fantastic. Really liked that Swan performance. He was very good. We're going to have to go to the kind of annoying dark days story of the weekend. I don't want to get too hand-wringy, but 38 minutes, the game was postponed because there was away fans in the home end openly celebrating and it caused fights. There was a man with blood pissing from his head and all sorts. Kyle Bartley having to get his family out of the stand. Just not scenes you want to see. And it just felt like, I think this is the first time I've seen something like that on British TV in my football watching lifetime. The only time I've seen things like this are from the 80s, from before I was born. Like, was the Luton riots that were really famous, like the football ground, I can't remember. There was a few of us. But Ben, it felt like a bit of a worrying sign, do you think? Because England, like, we obviously had a huge problem in the past. Now, we're not saying it's endemic, but it's not a good thing to see.
Yeah, it was a throwback, but not necessarily a good one. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the kind of, obviously there's been a bit of a blame game kind of going on. I think my issue with it is that how our home team, and this isn't just happening at West Brom or for this particular game, but I really don't understand this whole thing of how away fans are being able to get tickets in home ends at grounds in this day and age when there's so much more kind of security given around tickets and digital tickets and all that kind of stuff. I've seen it at Spurs loads of times. I've seen it in European games. We played Red Star Belgrade in the Champions League, and it's like there's Red Star fans all around the ground. It's like, how is this happening? And for a derby of this magnitude, I understand why everybody's so desperate to get a ticket, and they've not played each other in front of fans for, I think, 12 years, I think it was, since they were both last in the Prem. And I think it's one of those things where, obviously, you don't like to see those kind of scenes at all. But if you're an away fan in the home end of a ground, how stupid have you got to be? Because apparently, there's been so many kind of rumours going around of what actually happened. I saw a TikTok from Tom Garrett, who obviously is a West Brom fan. He was at the game. And he was saying where he was sat was actually really near where it all kicked off. And he said what happened was when Cunha scored that goal, there was one Wolves fan on his own in that end. And he basically stood up on his chair and started going all like this and started kind of giving it the big one. And then all of a sudden, all you knew, there was 10, 20 fans just all around him, just beating the shit out of him, basically. And then all the stewards got involved. They started protecting him. Then West Brom fans came from other areas of the ground running across the pitch to that corner. And the problem was it was the friends and family stand. So that's why Cole Bartley went and got his kids and his wife out of there and then didn't come back on. I think there was also like the front row of it is also like where wheelchair fans would have been, as disabled fans would have been as well. So that just kind of adds to the ugliness of it all as well. And then I think because fans, what he was saying was where fans were coming from other running across the pitch to get to there, just being really stupid, because they were never able to get into the crowd. They were just lobbing lighters, coins, all that kind of stuff. So then kids and whoever else was getting hit with it. And it's just not stuff you want to see. And then because all of the police were down the other end of the ground, because that's where the away fans were in that one end. There was no police really down that end. So then they all rushed over to that corner. And then because they'd all come over from there, it then all started kicking off at the other end of the ground because of the lack of police presence, which is then where that guy who we've all seen with the bloody head, that wasn't actually in that bit. It was over the other side of the ground, apparently.
Okay. Right.
Apparently that was because he was kicking off with the police. So that's how that came about, apparently. But it's just ridiculous. I think there's so many problems to it, and it was an ugly day for football, because it kind of just makes you think that, you know, obviously I don't have kids, but I can't wait to take my children when I have them to Spurs and stuff like that. And you never want to be in that situation. And it's obviously very scary, and football's come a long way. That's why we have all-seater stadiums and all that kind of thing now, because of, you know, in the 80s, I was talking to my stepdad earlier, it was like in the 80s and 90s or 70s and 80s, like this sort of stuff happened every week, but never make the news because it was just football hooligans, you know, that's how they acted. But I think you've got to be very, very naive to think that an away fan in the home end on his own, given it that big, was never going to end well, was it?
I've watched games as an away fan in the home end, and it is all I can do to just show zero expression. if we concede a goal, just be like, "Way!" and just crying inside or whatever. I think it takes a special kind of knobhead or a certain amount of gear to make you believe that you can kind of take on a whole stand, which is another issue within football stadiums in the UK as well, I think. But we should talk about the football, I suppose. Kieran, I was quite impressed with West Brom, to be honest. I thought they were pretty decent. It was just that Wolves had a little bit more cutting edge. Like when you've got players like Neto and Cunha, they're going to have the say in the end, aren't they?
Yeah, I think I've watched, as a Championship fan myself, I've watched quite a lot of West Brom this season. And they have actually been under, since they got Corberan, which is like about this time last year, roughly, they've looked a completely different team in like the likes of Jed Wallace, they've got John Swift. They've got a really, like, they've got a really strong team and they're looking like they could get a playoff spot. And I think they were a good, really good sort of advert for the Championship this season because they didn't look... I wouldn't say they looked a league below Wolves. I would say that you could tell with the likes of Mateusz Cunha and Pedro Neto, I think you can tell that those players are a cut above the West Brom players. But I didn't think that it looked like a team that were a league lower than Wolves, personally. But Cunha's goal was great. Great finish.
It was a great finish. I really like him as a player. I'm happy because he had a bit of a dodgy patch at Atletico where he was before, right? And it's good to see him kind of hitting his strides at Wolves. I really like Corberan as a manager. I think everywhere he's gone, he's done a pretty solid job. But for Wolves now, Ben, this is increasingly becoming a very good season. They're still like that mid table spot in the Premier League is very close. They could really make this a very special season with a cup run as well. Like, it's good to see for Gary O'Neill.
Yeah, for sure. You could actually kind of picture them being one of the teams that makes it to Wembley for the semi-finals. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it depends how the draw goes. I can't remember who they've got in the next round. It's been a really, really good season for them. We've talked about Gary O'Neill a hell of a lot on here, and it feels like he... Although, even though we've spoke about his time at Bournemouth and why they were right to let him go and move on, he's found his home at Wolves. And I think the fans have massively bought into him as a character, his style of play as well. He has got real quality in that squad, like real, real quality. Mateusz Cunha and Pedro Neto are just two examples. Lamina, I just think, obviously, he was not there, but he's been outstanding. Ait Nouri as well. They've got real, real quality throughout that squad. Holes in it as well that need to kind of be filled and added to. And obviously with Wolves, the fear is that with their financial kind of situation that some of these players probably will get picked off. I really like Bellegarde as well. He's been really, really good. But there kind of always is that fear that they might have to sell to be able to move on. And obviously that means that maybe someone like Neto could move on in the summer. Mm-hmm. But he feels like he's been linked away every year for the past few anyway. So it's nothing new to them. And I think they'll just get their heads down and get on with it. And they've got real, real quality, a real kind of style of play. Two really good goals at the weekend as well. There was that's one of the brilliant, satisfying things about football as well. When on the Wolves counter attack, when I think the initial shot was blocked, or I think they made a tackle on the edge of the box, and all the West Brom fans did the way, and then Pedro just put it in the bottom corner. It was like it was brilliant. But Wolves have. It's hard to say. I was thinking, are they kind of going under the radar? But they're not. They're definitely. They could finish in the top half. I think European football might be too much of a push for them. They've got United on Thursday, which I think at home, you'd fancy them to win that game. And they can make a kind of real push. I think they're unbeaten in their last five or six games and not conceding many either. So, yeah, they've had a really good season. I could sort of see them getting quite far in the cup. Mm-hmm. They've done quite well in the FA Cup in the past. I remember they got to semis... They lost to Watford. I remember that was going back quite a while now. They were 2-0 up, and I think Watford sort of made that comeback. But they've been there, you know. And I feel like there's no reason why they can't do that again. So it's a pretty exciting season for them. They love Gary O'Neill. They love a lot of the players, and I think they're flying.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it's great to see. They have Brighton at home in the next round. So definitely a game. The last game was absolutely terrible. So hopefully it'd be better than that. But a game that they'll definitely feel like they can get through. So that is fantastic. But Ben, we've been holding it off long enough. I genuinely was annoyed when City scored, even though it was against Spurs. I was like, oh, for God's sake, is no one going to stop? Is no one going to do anything about this team? They finally scored at your ground. That hoodoo is over. But it took, what was it, the 80? It was pretty late on. Yeah, Nathan Ake getting the goal. And yeah, what were your impressions of the game? Yeah, go.
It was an odd one. I thought there were some areas of the pitch that Spurs we kind of gave as good as we got. I thought our defence was as outstanding as you can be against Man City for the movement and attacking kind of intelligence they've got and the quality they've got. I thought there were some really outstanding performances from Van de Ven, Adogi. I thought Højbjerg had a really solid game. But I think City's quality just kind of showed that we're nowhere near that level yet. And that's kind of to be expected. I think from minute one, they kind of got control of the football, which again, nothing that you wouldn't necessarily expect. I just don't think we necessarily had that quality in the final third to make the chances that we did have count, because there were a few times in the first half where we broke through their press, played through the midfield really nicely, and found ourselves in good positions wide to get the ball in the box, and the final delivery wasn't good enough and all those kind of things. And it was just one of those nights where you can't be too disappointed. I think it's one of those ones where you'd rather lose. If you're going to lose like that, you'd rather lose to Kevin De Bruyne just putting it in the top corner from 25 yards or something. You wouldn't want to lose to that kind of goal. I didn't really think it was a foul. It's a talking point, but it's not, you know, I don't feel necessarily hard done by that. I think, again, it's more just the inconsistency around those ones. For me, I don't have a problem with it, but it is what it is. But I thought that it's plenty of the, I think there was a, as always on football Twitter, and especially with Spurs Twitter, which has become even more of a cesspit recently, there was a bit of an overreaction to it. But I thought, yeah, I thought there were some areas of the pitch we gave as good as we got, but unfortunately just weren't quite good enough. I thought for City, Foden was outstanding again. I think he's somehow, again, I don't know how many times we can say that he's kind of going under the radar a bit this season and it's having a quietly outstanding year, but he was just excellent. When you watch him, I was just in that first half when City were attacking the south stand where I was stood, and you're just watching him just float about, pick up these pockets. His first touch is a joke, like an absolute joke. He's got so much quality. I thought Oscar Bob was really good as well. He was quite unlucky with that goal, really. It was offside, but it was one of those that was marginal. He was really impressive. He feels like almost Foden, you know, a potential heir to Foden almost. I know Foden's still so young, quite similar in styles of play. So fleet of foot, just so delicate on the ball, just first touch, immaculate. Rodri was excellent the way he just commanded the game. I thought Kovacic, that was the best I've seen him play for City, probably for a long time, if not the best game he's ever had for them so far this season since he's been there. City deserves to go through. We did have chances, but we just couldn't make them count. And I don't have any grumbles with it. It's disappointing to be out of the cup, but I think we've got a good chance to kind of build some momentum in the league now with players coming back as well. I don't want to make it about injuries because we've talked about that so much with Spurs, but I think if we did have maybe a Son just to give us, because it felt a little bit toothless up front, and it wasn't even for Richarlison. I thought Richarlison put himself about really, really well. Thought his off the ball game was great again, as it has been this season, certainly since he had surgery. Looks to be moving a lot more free. I just didn't get any service. I thought Werner made a number of really, really good runs off the ball, especially in the first half, that just weren't picked up by Kulusevski or Adogi down that side. I think again with that, I think Adogi and him haven't played two games together, so that relationship just isn't quite there yet. And obviously Werner, that's Werner's bread and butter. It's like, that is what he's excellent at. His movement off the ball is superb. So that was, when you've got a limited player like that, you want to be getting the best out of him. So it's frustrating when you're not picking him out in those opportunities. Yeah. He created one really, really good chance as well. I thought Werner was actually okay. He created that chance for Johnson where he could have maybe gone around the keeper or cut it back. Real bit of quality from him. I thought Kulusevski, that was probably his worst game in a while.
I thought it wasn't really a great performance from him. I saw him like turning back towards his own goal quite a lot and kind of running into corners a little bit. I felt like he wasn't quite at his free-flowing best.
I think with the nature of the player that he kind of is, obviously, I think I love him and all the Spurs fans love him. And I think a lot of people who watch, you know, a lot of football don't sort of have the kind of the lazy take that a lot of people do have on Kulusevski just because he's not quick and he's not that agile. But sometimes in those kind of games, those, not flaws, but those downsides to these games are highlighted a bit. And it just looked from the first minute or so that it was just going to be one of those games where his first touch wasn't, it just didn't happen for him at all. Like, it just was one of the, it was one of them for him. And it felt like one of those games for a few players. I've spent the week kind of banging the drum for Rodrigo Bentancur on TikTok and Twitter. And he had a really sloppy game as well. He was just like, but
classic.
It's always the way.
Yeah. It's always, honestly, the second you're on this pod, whatever you say, the opposite happens.
Except that.
Like
his passing was just a bit sloppy, but I think it was just, And sometimes you need your bigger, in those sorts of games, you need to be perfect or lucky against City. And being perfect requires your best players to kind of have, especially on the ball. Because like I said, I thought the defence was outstanding into the way they defended. But Romero and Porro, for their good defensive work, weren't quite as snappy and as precise as they've been on the ball. A lot of underhit passes out from the back. Bentancur the same, giving the ball away. So those kind of things. So it was just, it was one of them, disappointing, but we move, as we said earlier.
Exactly. And for City, just another win, isn't it? They're slowly, and Haaland still has to come back. Like Kieran, it feels like it's just rumbling like the boulder behind you. It's slowly getting closer. They're clicking into gear, aren't they?
Yeah, and I mean, I saw Pep said it was either before or after the Tottenham game. I think it was before. He said our season starts today, or something like that, something along those lines. And it's like, they looked the other day against Tottenham like they weren't missing a 30 goal a season striker. Do you know what I mean? They just create so many chances, and with Haaland back in that team, they're just gonna be so scary to the rest of the league. And I mean, Haaland is gonna, I think he'll still win the Golden Boot, even though he's had this time out. I think he's just gonna come back, and he will just finish those chances that the likes of, he's got Bernardo Silva on top form, Foden on top form, Kevin De Bruyne getting back to top form, and then when you've got a striker like Haaland, they are just gonna, I think they're gonna win the league comfortably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll wait and see.
Well, this is it, and he's still, I think he's still joint top scorer in the Premier League. He's been out for ages, right? Like, it is utterly mental, But we're going to leave the FA Cup there, I think. Elsewhere, Luton got another win at Goodison Park, which was very impressive. A quietly very good season for them. Liverpool, David Wagner did Klopp a very huge favour by playing open football against them. Liverpool won 5-2. Newcastle got through against Fulham. And Blackburn Rovers are currently beating Wrexham 4-1. That kind of cheers me up a little bit because I'm bitter like that. Oh, and Brighton battered Sheffield United. João Pedro also having an incredible season for Brighton. I was really sceptical of that season, of that signing when he came across, but he has been unbelievable this year. So let's move over to Serie A, I suppose. It's time to talk about the Scudetto race and all things Calcio. And we're going to start with Lautaro. Is he the best Serie A striker in a generation? He is currently on 19 goals this season. Osimhen got 26 all in all last year in that incredible season he had. Lautaro is definitely on form to beat that number easily. I think he's on a goal a game at this point. Ben, that was just a really composed, beautiful header. And again, another vital win in a game that Inter weren't incredibly impressive going forward. Defensively, we'll talk about it. But Lautaro, the form he's been in, it's incredible, right?
Yeah, there's something so satisfying. I was talking to my mate about this the other day with, actually, I think it was the Norwich equaliser, about there's something so satisfying about those sort of near post flick-on header goals from corners. But the power that Lautaro got on that from that sort of position was incredible to beat the keeper at his near post. He is just, I think, to kind of the outside world, outside of Serie A at least, I do think people have been very sceptical of him for a while because of, I think we talked about this before, but his performances at the World Cup and maybe sometimes his performance in the Champions League not standing up to what he's done domestically. But he's an incredible striker. You don't score that many goals for Inter. And like you said, like you kind of posed the question, he could well be the best striker we've seen in Serie A for a long, long time.
Kind of six years, maybe. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like,
because with Osimhen, I always feel like with Osimhen, as incredible as he is, you never felt like he was going to kind of have that lasting. He has got a lasting legacy now because of what they achieved last season. But in terms of longevity domestically, I don't think he will never have that like Lautaro will at Inter. You kind of feel like Lautaro is almost more that kind of cult symbolistic player for Inter Milan. He's kind of become a version of a player that they have had so many times in the past. Maybe like you think about Milito and players that they've kind of had since then, especially with strikers. Mm-hmm. They've kind of always had this cult sort of figure, especially as the captain as well, that they've put on this pedestal. And yeah, I think he's an incredibly well-rounded striker. We've seen him be able to play in a strike partnership, up front in his own, kind of lead that line, all different types of finishes. And again, going away from home against a side like Fiorentina, who aren't in great form and aren't playing that well, they made it very difficult for Inter, but they found a way, and he somehow manages to squeeze out another goal from a very tight angle, or not necessarily tight angle, but a very difficult chance that he made look very, very easy. And he's an incredible, incredible striker that I think would be far more suited to the Premier League than I think a lot of fans who do give him that stick that I was talking about before give credit for, because I think he's kind of got, he almost reminds me a bit of Tevez, like what we used to see with Tevez when he first went to City.
Not
so much of how he played at United, but he's just got that movement, the drop of the shoulder, finishing in both corners, high and low, just headers as well. Like, he's just a very, very well-rounded striker, and I think he's only getting better as well. So it's great to kind of see him tearing it up, consistently proving doubters wrong, and that was a really, really important win for Inter, I think.
Yeah, it's massive. It's massive. And it looks like, I think he, if he hasn't already, he's due to sign a contract extension, because he is very, very, very happy in Milan. He's got his restaurant here. He's got his home here. And I think he's like absolutely loving it. But Kieran, where do you rank him amongst Europe's top strikers? Because I feel like people aren't talking about him because he's not going to move. Like, he's not leaving, so nobody's talking about him. But where do you rank it? Do you think he is like within that kind of Haaland, Osimhen kind of group of strikers?
I think the thing is, people, like, sort of English fans are often only really considering sort of Premier League and maybe a bit of sort of La Liga strikers. But I think when you actually look at it, as Ben said a minute ago, he's so well-rounded. There's not anything in his game that he can't do. And I would, to answer your question, I think he is like in that caliber of Haaland, Kane, Osimhen, and them on those levels. I really don't think he gets spoken about enough in as high regard as he should be, because he's got it all. And that, I think that goal on the weekend, last night, really showed what he can do, like, with his head. He's also an insane dribbler. And this season, if you look at his goals, he's got a real sort of vast catalogue of the types of goals that he can score. So I would have him, I really rate him. And I think he might be the best striker in Serie A for a while. I can't remember the last time we saw someone as good, maybe Milito or...
Yeah, I was trying to think. I think Icardi didn't hit those numbers, but he was dominating Serie A for like one or two seasons. I was trying to think maybe Ronaldo at Juve, you have to say, even though he's not a striker. But I don't think there's been that standout season beyond Osimhen that like Lautaro's having at the moment. And he's done it semi-consistently. He had a decent season last year. This year, he's really, really kicked on and is obviously dragging into there. I think, like, giving him the captain's armband was inspired because he clearly absolutely thrives off it. But Kieran, I'm going to go to you for a bit of, like, because Inter's transfer business. Now, this win was founded on Jan Sommer and Benjamin Pavard, two signings that I think have had the most impact for how much money they spent. Like, Inter, again, it looks like they're getting Zielinski. They're still getting those free signings. How impressed have you been with Inter's transfer business in general? And their defence this year, I feel, has really taken a step up.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, as you say, I mean, Sommer for me is maybe... I was actually speaking to my mate about this last night. I said I genuinely believe he might be the most underrated goalkeeper in our whole generation. He really, really doesn't get spoken about enough. I mentioned Gladbach, he was at before, and he was just insane. Like, some of the saves he pulls off on a weekly basis, I'm just amazed by. And I think he is a great signing. And yeah, I can't really praise him enough, because I do genuinely believe I think he's world class goalkeeper. I know I get annoyed at people saying world class.
For everyone.
Every single player is apparently world class, but I do genuinely believe he is in that top band of goalkeepers. Like, for me, he's so underrated. So I think he's a great sign. And then Pavard, really, I think also, again, really sort of stabilizes the defense. And obviously the whole thing of sort of having a like player with the amount of experience that he's got, World Cup winner. He's just an incredible player to have in the camp as well as on the pitch. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think you can't really fault, especially as like with the free transfers as well, you can't really fault what Inter have done. And I do believe they're going to win the league. We'll see, because obviously Juve could get
they're still there.
They're still there. They will be up there. But I mean, I just think, yeah, Inter look like the best team in the league right now. And from top to bottom, they do just have a really good squad, I think.
Yeah, we absolutely love to see it. I'm honestly surprised nobody else came in for Pavard. Like when they signed him, I was like, wow, that seems like someone's really let it slip through their fingers there. And I think he's had a bit of a stop-start season because they've not really had a settled defence at any real point. There's been De Vrij in and out, there's been injuries. But every time he's come in, he just looks super, super assured. And as you said, with the experience, just completely shores it up. I think Fiorentina played pretty well. Like, until Lautaro got the goal, I think they had the better start. They had a few offsides called. They were getting through Inter's midfield and causing them problems. But yeah, Inter just riding through these games and getting the results. But Ben, how bad was the Gonzalez penalty? I know Sommer saved it, but that was a bloody terrible penalty.
Yeah, really, really poor. Really poor. I don't like. It's one of those ones where you just kind of words almost like fail you. Just, like, you've kind of seen that so many times and it's your worst kind of nightmare. I thought Sommer was a little bit... with the actual penalty in itself, obviously we're kind of crossing leagues here, but... You've seen like where he's come out for that. It probably is a penalty, but again, we've kind of seen like different examples of that not be given. We've talked about the Onana example, obviously ironic that it'd be an Onana at the start of the season, come for the ball, not get it, take the man out, no penalty. That one, he had a right to go for it, but I think there's kind of clear contact. But then I always find it with like, it's always going to look worse as well if you sort of do that little mini stop and he sort of had that long run up and he just, and again, I have a little bit of sympathy because it's like, if that goes in the other corner and he just rolls it in, then it's like, oh, what composure, but he's just got it wrong. And it felt like one of those games where everything that went Sommer's way, he was going to keep it out of the back of the net anyway. So it's tricky with those kind of ones, because like I said, if he goes the other way, it's like, oh, great composure in such a key moment, but he's got it wrong. And it was a really, really easy save.
It looked embarrassing. But Adam is popping up with Beppe Marotta, of course, is a mastermind at transfer business. But credit to Inzaghi for getting the best out of these players. Now, I'm going to kind of put you both on the spot here. Now, obviously, there's some major departures coming at the end of the season. Some more welcome than others. I don't think Barcelona fans are particularly sad to see Xavi go. Some Liverpool fans are having nervous breakdowns. But do we think that Inzaghi is being ignored here? Because I think if he wins the Scudetto with Inter, which, as we said, we think is likely without jinxing it, do you think he should be getting linked to more of these jobs? Like, Kieran, I'll go for you first. Because I think a club like Liverpool or Barcelona could do a hell of a lot worse. The progress he's made with this Inter team has been incredible.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the name that's being thrown around, obviously, the most for Liverpool is Xabi Alonso at the moment. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I completely understand that. I mean, of course, you would never have said with Bayern getting Kane, it's like putting Mentos in Diet Coke, really, for the Bundesliga title race. You think like they should have like walked the league, and the way Xabi Alonso's Leverkusen are playing is like incredible. Mm-hmm. But like you say, I do genuinely think that Inzaghi's name should be being mentioned at least, because I do believe he could do it. He could do a great job at either Barcelona or Liverpool, and I think you need a manager at both of those institution who knows how to be. I know they both have like sort of big budgets and everything, but Liverpool is the main example. They don't necessarily always spend as much as the Chelsea's, the Man City's. So I think being like getting the best out of some like cheaper players and some more experienced players would really benefit Liverpool in particular. So I think I don't think it'd be a bad shout at all for them to get Inzaghi.
Yeah, I think, but Ben, why do you think it is he's being ignored a little bit? Do you think it's because it's Serie A? Do you think it's because he doesn't really seem like he wants to go anywhere? Maybe we're causing problems where there isn't one. But why do you think he's kind of being overlooked?
I think there's an element of that for sure, in the sense that I do people I do think people see sort of Serie A, and there is this perception in England that it's not the league it used to be, and all this kind of stuff. And I do think that massively kind of clouds people's judgment, because Inzaghi has got the Champions League credentials as well. And we've spoken about this many times, in the sense that I feel like they could go deep in the Champions League again this year. And if he does that again, then why shouldn't he be on these kind of lists? Because I do feel like sometimes people from the outside need this. I kind of have this idea that, especially with Mourinho gone now as well, like, if there's not a Conte or not a Mourinho in Serie A, and bear in mind how kind of poor Conte's record has been, or certainly not necessarily his record at Tottenham, but how poor he was in that second half of the season, how much he's fallen off. That's not necessarily done much to kind of help those kind of attitudes towards managers coming over from Serie A. But they're two completely different styles. He's a younger manager who has got an Inter team competing with the best of the best in the Champions League. Yes, their run was maybe a little bit favourable last year, but they got to the final and gave, you know, a good go of it against Man City. And they could do that again this year. They're playing brilliant football. Mm-hmm. They're clearly the best team in the league, although I think Juventus, you know, I think Inter, like Kieran said, I do think Inter will win the league. But in terms of pound for pound best football and how smart they've been with their business, although that's not necessarily down to Inzaghi, they're an excellent team, like so well balanced, so well rounded, so solid at the back. But also it's interesting because I do feel like when you said that, I hadn't given it much thought in terms of Liverpool or Barca, but it feels like with what Liverpool have had with Klopp, they don't want a Klopp 2.0. Mm-hmm. They don't need that. They need kind of someone who's a bit younger, a bit fresher to come in. But you kind of still want that kind of statesman style manager. And I do think Inzaghi, with what he's built at Inter and the kind of relationship that he has with the fans there, why can't he do that at Liverpool? Mm-hmm. It feels a better fit for Barca, but then it's like with Barca, you're just walking into a shit show. And it's like,
I don't know who's going to join.
It's Barca. Not a good move, is it? Yeah, it's not like, because you know, I feel like if Inzaghi went to Liverpool and he did okay, but it didn't quite work out, there's still room for him to move elsewhere. Whereas like, I feel like if he went to Barcelona, although they've got some incredibly exciting players, and I would be very interested to see what he could do, how's that going to help him move on his managerial career? So I feel like it's definitely, I don't see it, but like I definitely don't see why he shouldn't be, I don't see why he shouldn't be on these lists for sure. Like I just don't, it feels a bit bizarre to me that he's not been in any of the conversations because of how well he's done with his team.
This is it. And I think, I'm not even saying he's going to go. I just think, as you said, people should be recognising that he's in that group. And I think maybe it's because he's the less fashionable of the brothers. Sorry, Simone. Maybe it's because his playing career wasn't as outstanding as Filippo's. But you have to look at like the job he did at Lazio as well, like getting them back into the Champions League, winning a few cups with them, winning the Supercoppa with them and winning the Coppa Italia. I think like he got a few cups with them. He did an incredible job at Lazio. And I think this is, again, just him taking a huge step in his, and it's just, I'm so impressed. The football they play is just incredible. And yeah, we like you, Simone, even if no one else is looking at you. We've got a lot of time for you. But we're going to go across the city, I suppose. I'm going to talk about the team in Milan having a bit less fun. They managed to miss two penalties and give up a 2-goal lead. 2-2 it ended. Orsolini getting an equaliser in the 90th minute, whatever it was. Milan just do not have a cutting edge, but we need to talk, Kieran, about Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I've been saying this whole season, if he can have a run of form and if he can stay fit, this guy will be fantastic. He's now got a few goals in the last few games. It's good to see him doing well, right?
Oh, brilliant. I've always rated him as a player. I thought he was sort of in a bit of an awkward situation at Chelsea where he was sort of not really breaking into the first team, and then when he was in the first team there was sort of too much weight on his shoulders, I felt like, because they were in a bit of a time of a transitional period. But I think at Fulham there was always a player there, and as we've seen now, he's gone to AC Milan and clearly he is like fulfilling his potential. And like, obviously with a brace yesterday, that's just incredible. And I hope he can go on a great run of form, because it clearly, I think, has he got like, is it 6 goals in 8 or something like that?
He's on a run now.
I think that it's around 6 goals in 8, and obviously from his position, it like from central midfield, it's a very impressive record he's got. And Yeah, I think it's great to see a player, as an English fan, it's great to see a player come over when they've been sort of struggling in the Premier League and then come over to Serie A and really sort of come into their own. And he's always had the talent to be great, and like now we're seeing the best of him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic to see him hitting the stripes, because Milan are struggling for players in good form, really. They've been quite fortunate that there's a bit of a gap between them and fourth. Like, the fact that there's 10 points between them and Atalanta in third and fourth means that they can be forgiven a few sins. Like, they can have a slip like this and it's not going to cost them. But Ben, this is kind of, I know they've just come off four wins in a row, to be fair, in the league. Like, they're not doing badly, but it does point to a wider issue with Milan, that they are still relying on, as much as we love him, Olivier Giroud, to get you through and score 20 odd goals a season. They still just don't quite have that cutting edge, do they?
No, it feels like, obviously, it's the complete opposite of what we've been talking about with Martinez, Inter. Although Giroud is, you know, is one of the best strikers, or most underrated strikers, certainly of his generation, in my opinion. And I do think he suits the way that Milan play really well, in terms of being able to bring the wide players in. His first touch is still just immaculate, still a great finisher. But, you know, it's not, it's going to be a problem that they, it's a problem that it feels like they just sort of keep putting off dealing with. And maybe it feels like potentially, if they were to raise funds through selling one of their other players, whether it's a bigger club comes in for Liao in the summer and they use that money to kind of reinvest it into that forward line, whether that's spent solely on another striker or not, I don't know, or whether they just kind of revamp the whole front line. But it's, you know, it's a ticking kind of time bomb for Milan to address that issue. It's working fine for now, but in these sorts of games where you do kind of fail to convert these kind of chances and all this kind of stuff, and it will come back to bite you. But I think it's an interesting point you say about Loftus-Cheek, because I think what was really good about that first goal in particular, and I think what plays into Giroud's game as well, is being able to, Giroud's movement, being able to take other players out of the way for midfielders to run. We saw that a lot at Chelsea, and we see that a lot at Arsenal as well, about his kind of movement, bringing other players into play, leaving the gaps for someone like Loftus-Cheek, who we know has kind of got that presence in the box as well to run in and finish really well. It's such intelligent movement. So I think it's a tricky one to balance, because he still brings so much to this Milan side, Giroud, but it's a problem that they are going to have to deal with. And it feels like you're better off just ripping the plaster off sooner rather than later and going big for another striker. And I thought we saw a really good performance from Xerxes as well on the other end of the pitch as well. I thought he could potentially be someone that they could potentially look to as well with his kind of game, in the way that he brings other players in. Great composure in the box. He's got a long way to go in terms of developing his game, for sure. But it feels like Milan is quite a good step up, I think, to do that. Go and be the man there. Obviously, Bayern Munich will have something to say about that. But yeah, I think, it's an interesting conundrum with Giroud. It's just because I wouldn't say he gives and takes away with equal measure, but it's a problem that they need to address, I think, even though he's still very, very good.
Yeah, well, having watched him for years at Arsenal, he's beautiful. He scored some of the best goals and most beautiful goals I've ever seen, but he's also incredibly frustrating for 90% of the time and goes on mad runs of just not scoring. It's definitely up in the air. But as Adam has just said, Noah Okafor will definitely come good as well. He's getting a few runs, a few kind of goals this season. But we need to talk about Rafa Leão. He's only scored 6 goals and got 6 assists this season in all competitions. Now, Leão has always been streaky. He's always been a player that can annoy you. But Kieran, it feels like his head has fully been turned at this point. There's been one or two too many rumours linking him to the big clubs, and he definitely looks a little bit disinterested, right?
Yeah, I do agree. I think he's still, as you say, you can still see glimpses of what we saw last season. And I think his like pace and dribbling and everything, like his physical abilities are just incredible. But yeah, I do think when the likes of, you know, like PSG and all those sort of, I know AC Milan are a massive club, but like those clubs that are going to be sort of competing for Champions Leagues and competing for league titles every year, it would sort of, I can understand why his head's being turned, but at the same time, I mean, we as Serie A fans, we want to see him at the best of his game. But yeah, I do think he doesn't look the same player at the moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still really enjoy watching him because I think talent-wise, he's in the conversation for the best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as you say, 6 goals and 6 assists, it's an okay return, but based on what we know Rafael Leão can do, it's not quite up to scratch, really, is it? And I think, yeah, I think we can expect, hopefully it will improve for the rest of the season, because obviously Milan needs to start picking up these points, because otherwise, you know, they've got teams really trailing them, and they might lose out that fort like that, those Champions League spots. So
I think Leão on form and they get a win here, if you know what I mean.
He manages to create a moment
to get them the game. But we have to give Bologna some credit. Their season has kind of been petering out a little bit. They've hit a rough patch of form. They've only got one win in the last five, but this is a big draw away in Milan. It'll feel like a win by courtesy of the last minute penalty from Orsolini, but also, as you said, Ben, Xerxes having an incredible season. I'd be intrigued to see him do it over more than one season. Like I said, before the season kicked off, I thought this could be a breakout season for him, because Bologna sold on out of itch and that left the space for him to be the main guy and him get the minutes and have a proper run in the team. And he's taken full advantage. I want to see him do it again next year. And I hope for him, really, that he stays at Bologna for one more year and then gets his big move and just gives himself a bit more time. So I think if the Bayern Munich move in the first place shows anything for Xerxes, is that he made that move too early. And it wasn't the right for him. He went to Parma and he went here, he went there, and he's taken a while to get back on track. So I hope he has learned the lesson and has a bit of patience and gives Bologna another year. But we will see another, great goal by him. Great season all around.
Yeah. I think he's saying beautiful finish. I think his composure in the box for someone who's quite tall in stature and could almost look quite clunky with his feet, it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, from what I've seen, I think all of the kind of fundamentals are there. But like you said, I think he is potentially at risk of... The only thing I would say to that, or it kind of probably proves your point even more, to be honest, is the fact that, I definitely think he probably made that Bayern move too soon. But the fact that they have a huge percentage of that sell-on clause inserted in his contract shows you that they definitely still believe in his potential. I think they might have a buyback clause as well. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's for when I was 40 million, but it's only for them.
Yeah. But I think for other clubs, they've got a big percentage of a sell-on fee as well, haven't they? So it's like they do definitely believe that he could either go on to be something special there or elsewhere. And I think he's just really fun to watch as well. Very skillful for someone that's the whole kind of archetype of like stereotype of great touch for a big lad. But he definitely does have that. And he's definitely got some kind of skill to go alongside as well. But yeah, I really enjoyed that finish and a good performance from him as well.
Absolutely love it. Well, elsewhere, pod favourite, Davide Nicola. The good times continue at Empoli. After that fantastic Zhukovsky-inspired win, they managed to hold Juventus to a point, 10-man Juventus, to a point, 1-1. Now, the big moment for me here, I don't know if you saw this, the referee blew the whistle. Nobody's talking about it. The only person I've seen mention it is Uncle Sharma, Inter fan, friend of the pod, that the referee blew the whistle as Baldanzi was about to shoot on an open goal. Definitely suspicious. But we need to give Empoli some credit. Baldanzi, a great performance from him. Juve, of course, Vlahovic scored, but they let the point slip. A bad night all round for Juve, Ben, eh?
Yeah, it's probably one of those where with 11 men, they probably do hold on. Mm-hmm. And especially going down. But then again, it's tricky because just like you go 1-0 down that early on into the game, then get yourself in front. The goal, although it was a good finish, was pretty soft to concede that. It almost just dribbled into the far corner. And it was like, it just felt like one of those. You've been there so many times before where you've kind of been holding on in these games. And then it's a goal like that that sort of undoes it for you, where it's just like it feels very avoidable. And again, that's with Inter winning as well and kind of showing their teeth and showing the kind of, you know, the makings of them to go and get that really impressive victory away from home at Fiorentina. This was a real opportunity for Uwe at home, despite the fact that Empoli, you know, kind of season rolls on for them and they're having a great time of it. But yeah, that's two massive points dropped for Uwe. But again, the fact that, I think if you're looking at the positives, the fact that they have got Vlahovic scoring at a regular rate now. He kind of keeps up this run that he's on. Another good finish for him in a crowded penalty area. We've seen like a lot of, I think, a lot of the goals that he's been scoring recently have just been really quality finishes, but sometimes in a bit of space. And it's just like he's got the time to kind of really take his time with it and just pick out the corner so ruthlessly. Or like we've seen, we saw him again nearly score another free kick in the first half. He's just got so much quality. Mm-hmm. But that goal was good because it was just like so many men around him, but he managed to get it on the volley, kind of almost like falling over as well. And it was a good finish. But yeah, big disappointment for Juve for sure.
Yeah, well, it's a confident Vlahovic again, isn't it? He got lost a little bit at Juve, but it's good to see him have his confidence back. The madness before this game, we need to talk about Allegri. Like, Allegri is a notorious mental person. Like, he is a weirdo. Have you seen his one-man campaign to get mind games against Inzaghi? And Inzaghi is just refusing to engage. He came out with some really strange analogies this week. He described Juve are the police and Inter are the thieves, and he was coming up with all this stuff like nobody wants us to win and Inter and like just trying to bait Inzaghi into a reply. Obviously nobody said anything, and then after the game he just threw out another thing just hoping that Inzaghi says something. So I feel like the pressure might be getting to Allegri already as feels he crumbles like a it. Little bit. But of course this is all ahead, Kieran, of the Derby d'Italia, which is It's the next game. It's coming up. And both these teams, how do you see it? How are you feeling about this game? This is absolutely massive. Of course, Inter 1 point ahead with the game in hand. Juve need to win this.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a fantastic game. I think, as you say, like, I think it comes down to whether Inter can keep Vlahovic quiet. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, as you say, they've really improved in their defence this year, but I think keeping Vlahovic quiet, he's on a bit of run form, and like he's a difficult man to deal with at the best of times. So I think if they can keep him quiet, and I do believe Inter will win the game, but I think it's going to be a tough one. I'm not sure if it'll necessarily be a high scoring one. Mm-hmm. It has a history of being high scoring, but I think it's. I'm not sure if it'll be high scoring, but I think it'll be one at the back if Inter are to win it. I think they've got to focus on getting that clean sheet, and hopefully then just, you know, Lautaro will hopefully deliver, as we spoke about earlier. If they can keep clean sheet, then someone will get a goal off it. I think it's sort of going to be a 1-2 goal game, and hopefully it's 1-2-0 to Inter.
We hope, Ben. How do you see it going? It's set up so nicely.
Yeah, I see it the same way, to be honest. I feel like Inter, that momentum is with them now, with Juve slipping up, dropping points. Inter have got that game in hand as well. So this is an opportunity to go 4 points clear with a game in hand. And I feel like it is at San Siro, isn't it? The reverse fixture was 1-1 at Juve. So it's, you know, it's a massive opportunity for them in front of a home crowd. And I do think they'll get it done. Like Kieran says, I don't think it'd be massively high scoring. I could see it being 2-0, 2-1. Because I feel like with the way, especially the Inter defended at Fiorentina, although a lot of it felt backs to the wall in terms of like some of the blocks from Pavard and what Sommer was pulling out, etc. With, you know, De Vrij, Bastoni, Pavard, that is a very solid back line. And it does feel like this kind of statement game almost now that this will be. And potentially season defining as well, with an opportunity to go 7 points clear if they win the game in hand as well after this. It's a huge opportunity for Inter that I don't see them passing up. I certainly don't see Juve winning. I feel like it may be a draw, but I feel like this is Inter's for me.
Yeah, I really, really hope we're right and we haven't just put the classic Anglo-Italian curse on it, but we will see. Elsewhere in Serie A, just very quickly to go through the results, Lazio and Napoli was absolutely atrocious. 0-0. Both the games last season were fantastic between these two teams, and it says a lot about the drop in standard at both sides that game was just awful. Dionisi continues to have a terrible time at Sassuolo. Monza winning 1-0 there. Colpani with another goal. Verona and Frosinone drew 1-1. Verona just doing their best to throw away games at this point. Caio Jorge scoring again, his first time getting back-to-back goals in Serie A. And Scamacca scoring, and Maranchuk as Atalanta beat Udinese 2-0. Atalanta very quietly up in fourth place now on 36 points with the game in hand over Roma, who are currently winning 2-1 away in Salernitana. So that race for the top four still very much alive. But Atalanta quietly having a very, very good season. And for my Fanta Calcio, I hope Scamacca plays a few games in a row. It would be nice to see him just not have one game and then disappear for a month. But guys, I think that is everything for the show. I think we've covered everything. Anything else we wanted to talk about before we send these lovely people home?
Just to quickly, Napoli-Lazio, it was a pretty awful game. But did you see the disallowed goal?
Yes. Some goals should just be allowed to stand, right? I think that's
exactly.
We need to amend the laws. That's a very good point. I should have remembered that.
What goal did we have that with a few months ago? Where it was it against? I think it was against Juve, but I can't remember who it was.
Oh, I'm gonna have to. It's gone. But there
it was on the last minute of the game. I can't remember who it was now.
No, it's gone. But yes, we need to write to Lega Serie A and see if they can change the laws. There has to be an amendment. Yeah. Well, they don't know what's going on. They'll bring it in. But anyway, guys, thanks for joining us. Kieran, thanks for joining us. It's been a pleasure. You're getting a lot of love in the chat as well, by the way. But when our viewers and followers want to find you, where can they find you online? Where can they see your stuff?
So on mainly on Twitter, which is KHAnalytics02, and then also on Instagram, KHHAnalytics. So, but yeah, I'm going to be posting sort of like, you know, mainly just sort of data stuff, and then also I'm doing long style threads as well weekly. So yeah, but thank you.
Beautiful.
I appreciate
good
it.
Stuff.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure, man. It's been a pleasure. And Ben, pleasure as always. Do you want to plug your channels before we go?
Yeah, Ben Talks Football on TikTok. I'm about to go and make a little video because I've just seen Antonio Nunes has failed his medical at Brentford. So a bit of a bullet dodge for Spurs potentially there. Wow. So if you want to hear my opinions on that, go and watch that. Because there was a lot of Spurs fans losing their minds last night when that broke.
Of course.
About him, him choosing Brentford over us and all this kind of stuff. But he has apparently failed his medical. So yeah. But yeah, Ben Talks Football on TikTok. Ben_Bowman_ on Twitter for more just Tottenham ramblings, a lot of underscores in there. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Beautiful. Well, guys, thank you. As always, hit the like and subscribe button. You can find us on Twitter at Italian Anglo Pod, on Instagram and TikTok at Anglo Italian Pod. We're doing some AFCON stuff. We're doing reactions. We're doing all sorts. And yeah, give us a like and subscribe. Tell a friend and everything. We will be back on Friday looking forward to the Derby d'Italia and all the Premier League action. There's Premier League action this midweek as well that I've completely forgot about. And we will be recapping that. So we will see you on Friday, guys. Ciao. A dopo. Podcast Network.